Badfinger, No Matter What, from the album No Dice. Badfinger. All right. We heard another short piece from the Salo soundtrack, or Salo or 120 Days in Sodom. We heard a short excerpt of Afternoon of a Georgia Fawn by the great Marion Brown. Great record. One of these days I'll play the whole thing. It's rather long, but good, but really good. Flower Corsano Duo. Before that, oh, we already did that. Okay, so that's it. I gotta get out of here. Stay tuned for Miracle Nutrition. Stay tuned to WFMU. That's WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. I'm Fabio, and I'll see you next week. Take care.
I just acted like the beginning got cut off. But it didn't get cut off. It's just that the show went a little long. So I pretended that the beginning got cut off. Isn't that crazy? That's just the Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White kind of thing that we do around here. And have some fun. And then think about, you know, is there any kind of profound implication of cutting off the beginning? Well, hello, my friends. You are listening to the audio version of the opposite of those videos where people scream at one another for no reason, usually adjacent to their cars. So, is this your car?
Yes, sir.
It's fine. What a fine little runabout it is. What kind of car you got here? Oh, sir, it's a 79 Chevy Nova. You have to keep your foot on the gas or it stalls out. How about that? I remember an old man once said that to me. Said, I like your runabout. And he was referring to my 79 Chevy Nova. And it was yellow because the manufacturer knew. They were like, oh, good luck with this. And you had to keep your foot on the gas or it stalled out. It wasn't very fast. They had made Chevy Novas in the past that were very fast. But then they thought, hey, let's make some. And then we'll put like a lawnmower engine in it or something. And I wonder if anybody would notice. And I think a lot of the good 70s cars did have either Lawn Boy or Toro engines. Oh, I'm just kidding you. But I am interested in teaching about the past. Now that I am old, I realize this happened to old people when I was young. You can spend your whole life not knowing anything or being good at anything. But if you get to a certain age, then you remember old shows or movies or something, and that is worth something. Because a lot of times, the copies of that movie will have burned, and you're the only one who's seen it. And you can just rewrite damn history. And I like that. I want to do that. Like, no one's ever seen this one movie. Did you see it, old-timer?
I did see it. And Joan Bennett came out of the clouds on a chariot of sapphire. And she was shooting lasers from her fingers. And all the people back then used to worship pandas as gods.
I don't know, but you can, and that's a lovely thing, and you can change. Can you change the past? I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Because I've also, as an old, you say, you're not very old. Come on, stop judging everybody. I'm old enough. If I was a sandwich, you wouldn't even think about eating me. So it's also relative. You know, I'm old for a lot of things. My goodness. A dog. Even if I was a parrot, you'd think, okay, man, he's about halfway there. And that might be for myself, too. I'm glad I'm not a parrot. Parrot is very close to parent, though. And it would be tough having a parent that lived to 200 or something. Because parrots are like that. I have a friend who inherited a couple from his late parents. And they were parrot fanciers. And the parrots they bought were... they bought them from the Highlander, and he's immortal, and the parrots are immortal, and they can't be killed unless you cut their heads off, and no one's going to do that. Who's going to do that? They're lovely creatures, although a little neurotic. And so these screaming, flighted monsters now live with my friend, and he said, well, what if you had a parrot like that? You go, what? You know, come down there. You torn all your hair out.
Yes, because you won't talk to me.
Like that. So that's like it is. I've never had an elderly parent live with me, so I don't know exactly what it's like. Oh my goodness! I guess you'd get something like a cuddle bone,
That's with T's, not a D. Oh, I'm just so delighted to be able to speak with you. I feel like it's not a platform, but more like a pit. I'm speaking to you from a pit. That's what the radio is. It's like, I wish I had a platform. Yeah, but it'd be even better to have a pit because people come running. It's like a boy in the well kind of thing. He's screaming down here. Hey, y'all, want to hear a story? Yes, but it is an opportunity to speak with my fellow people. And I assume you're people. Some of you are pets. Put your pets by the radio, which is lovely. I love that. I was just talking to a friend how you go, I'm the person at a party. I either have to have a camera or your dog. So there's no other way I'm going to be able to, because I can't. I love all of you, but I'd like to interact through something else, like a camera or a dog. And so I'd like to go find your dog, and then we'll hang. And you need me? Need either one of us. And the same thing with the camera. You can do that. Now, I don't take pictures of people at parties, but it's a wonderful thing. I adjust my ISO and my shutter speed just constantly. And I never find a good enough picture to actually take. I don't think that's the point of photography. I think a lot of times it's learning how to see. Wasn't it, what's his name? Berger? Who's the British? I'm going to take about 15 minutes to look this up. Y'all listen to music. If I had a producer, by Hardy White, if I had a producer, they could bring me information and coffee and a sandwich. Sometimes I could just ask a question out of the blue, and the producer would be looking it up while I'm doing something else, and then the answer would come like magic or Christmas. And anything that I needed, I would just have to wink or make a signal off of camera. My producer. If I hired a producer, I can't hire a producer. If I had a producer that was court appointed, I bet they would do some shtick the whole time, like based on the movie, The Producers. I just saw Kenneth Mars, the actor, who's in The Producers, and a McMillan and wife. Oh, my goodness, I remember. Here's some history. I'm going to drop this history on you, as the kids say, but I'm going to pick it up and clean it off and lick it and then tell you about it. So that's what we're going to do. Here's some history. Get ready. There was this Monday, Tuesday night mystery show when there was just network television. What's that? So you turn on the television. Let's just start at the beginning. You buy a television, and you bring it home, and you plug it in. Now, you got to get the broadcast in to the television, and you could do this by an antenna. Now, there's two types of antennas because there's two types of signals coming through. Very high frequency. No, that's not true. Yeah, very high frequency and ultra high frequency. Is that right? I think so. And so they take different types of antennas because they're different wavelengths, right? I guess so. Go on. So you've got maybe rabbit ears for the channel 2 through 13. And you've got, you know, your UHF little round antenna too. So you tune it in and you get through the static. You get the signal coming in. And you could get, first it was Dumont Network. And then, what was next? The Roosevelt Flower Network. I don't think that was one, but they had strange other networks. And then they got the NBC, ABC, CBS, any combination, any permutation of letters could have been a network, but they just had the three. And then eventually they had PBS, which is an abbreviation of pubis. So then, they had this NBC Mystery Theater. What I'm going to do it as country as possible, so it sounds like I'm naive about it. I didn't know what it was. And they'd show television shows. They'd rotate them. So this was like Tuesday at 8 or 9 or something, and they'd have mystery shows. Among them, Columbo. Oh, my God. I've heard of Columbo. Yes, so you've heard of Columbo. I've heard of him. Then they had McMillan and Wife. McLeod, I believe Snoop Sisters, which somebody said, that's not real. Unfortunately, it is. I don't make things up. The people who made things up were middle-aged men on cocaine. And that's who, and say, oh, I've got a great idea for a thing. Actually, it was alcohol. First, it was alcohol, and then they switched to cocaine. Now, who knows what they're on? All sorts of manner of pharmaceuticals and everything. How do you know they're not making television sober? I'm kidding. That's, who would ask that? So this McMillan and wife. Now, it was Rock Hudson and Jill Mumdamdadim, Kate Nally Alley. Kate Nally Kate? Kate Nally Kate. Kate Nally Alley. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Comment board.
Doesn't matter. Don't do it. Everybody, try hard. I'm going to issue a challenge sometimes. I'm going to say something, and I want to issue a challenge to the comment board, like wrong answers only. Because I think what happens is you say, oh, it was this person. Was it? You know, who knows? We don't know. And things are going to get more complicated with AI, and we don't know who was in what anymore. So once that happens, it's silly to try to say, well, actually, well, there is no actual anymore, so you can't say that. So that's kind of neat. McMillan and wife. Now, he is the police commissioner. She is and wife, but she's spunky and from a long line of police. So they're partners, basically. They're doing it together. So the end wife is kind of ironic because she's really kind of running the show because he's I don't know. He comes across not very, she's more engaged and has more pep and vigor. And he's kind of lumbering and he's a taller Rockford type. And even though he's police commissioner, he gets in hella fist fights with criminals. Like, he's always chasing them. And I don't know whether they only seem to have one. They have a detective sergeant who's John Shuck, who is Holmes and Yo-Yo. Holmes and Yo-Yo was a buddy cop thing where one of them was a robot, I think. Who knows? But anyway, so this is the show, and this is what fascinated me. I was watching it. I don't think it's very good, and I say that I'm very generous of spirit with 70s things. But, for instance, there was a restaurant scene, and it just looked like the corner of the studio with a blanket up on the wall. It didn't – they so low effort. So I was like, but there's good stars in it. Wally Cox was in an episode, and he's amazing, and so this is what happened when they were in bed. Mac, she calls him Mac. It's McMillan. He's McMillan. She calls him Mac. And then she says Mac every 10, 15 seconds in the script. Mac?
What?
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
The thing that made me say Mac. And I thought, wow, that's a nice piece of writing, though. I like that because I'm,
what is it?
It was this episode where she kept hearing things and nobody else would hear it or see something. And then, like, she'd see a dead body and by the time she went and got somebody to see it, it was gone. You know that old thing where they mean, oh, okay. I think you're just tired and seeing corpses.
It'd be ridiculous. It was just, yeah, I guess so. I guess there wasn't really a body there. Now that I'm thinking about it. So it's kind of that. I didn't buy that or anything like that. So why are you sharing that?
Well, I'm sharing it for this reason. We assemble ourselves out of components from our environment. Before television or the movies, one would wander in the market square or one of those public areas or go to the work site at which they were carving stone or making blocks of wood for their wood block temple worship. Or something. I don't know. Yeah, they were engaged in something. So you would notice other types of people and other goings on and stories, and you would sort of find a way to be one of these people. Like if you were beamed right now into a situation where you
you closed your eyes and you opened them and suddenly you were in a little Bavarian town or something and you had to blend in, you would look at people and try to act like they're acting and do what they're and develop your personality based on Johann and Wilhelm and other of your Bavarian friends. Jimmy. Jimmy's not from there. He moved there. He's from Cleveland, where all famous people are from. Oh, my goodness. Is it the famous people leave Cleveland? No, I don't think that's it either, because sometimes they just say, I'm going to stay here and be famous. And then they do that. So I don't know what it is about Cleveland. I'm fairly obsessed that every other time that I look up where a celebrity's from, it's Cleveland. And I know that, like, I have a lot of friends who are from Owensboro, but that's because they've willfully left, say, oh, we got to get out of here. But, I mean, Cleveland's not so bad, right? So is there something great going on there? I know that they had a chemical weapons factory there in World War I. You don't wonder, you know, oh, there's something in the water. Yeah, you know, chemical weapon stuff, you know, I don't know. It could be. It makes you funny. That the word funny is interesting. Because I find that, you know, there are people that find me funny, but then there's people that find me funny, you know? Like, I feel funny. Or, I feel funny! That kind of thing. So funny does mean, you know, just, oh gosh, that's not what I'm used to. And I come down solidly in the, you know, could go either way, I think. And is it comedy? Just not drama. So we'll wait and see how it plays out. Oh, I don't know. Let's say it's not laugh out loud funny. There was a movement, some kind of yogi or something was doing, and I think it still exists, and I think they've done this in other religions too, this laugh thing where they do an infectious laugh and they try to achieve ecstatic experiences by exploiting their mirror neurons and laughing so that it becomes contagious. You know, somebody else's laugh, you can't stop laughing. I wonder, I'm trying to think that if only you could exploit that for entertainment, but it kind of works with open mic stand-up stuff, because I've gone to that, and I don't have a meter that can read this, but I've gone to a lot of open mic stand-up comedy things, and I hear laugh and I go, it's not earned. There's no earned, like, this is sometimes it's uncomfortable laughter. Sometimes it's, there'll be someone in the back who goes, and then people go, but I think they're laughing at the laugh. So there's all this kind of like, it's not clear what the motivation of the laughter is. And then, like I said, you know, it can sound maniacal, like, oh, somebody gave crack to a baboon or something. And then what happened, like a monkey has got access to psychedelics, and it's because when I hear people chattering, I just think, oh gosh, I think about scary, like a mandrill or something that's looking at me with fangs and cackling, because laughing doesn't seem very rational. So I'd like to, I don't know, maybe like chin strokey comedy where he says, that's true. Hardy has said something that really gets to the pith. I'd say heart, but that's a little redundant. He's pithy, I think, isn't he? I think he is. And so I do get to the pith of the nut or the meat, the nut meat, I think, of things. And then, you know, it's not a laugh that's going on exactly, you know? You don't have to expel gas to have gas, right? You know, say, oh, I got gas. Well, you're not burping or doing the other. And so, well, it's not, you know, but I'm gassing on the inside. And I think that's like that with humor. I feel appreciated in many ways by my dry cleaner. I don't have a dry cleaner. I take my clothes to a dry cleaner. But I don't feel possessive, and we don't have a relationship, and that kills me, you know. I wish we did. I remember living very close to a dry cleaning place, and I was like, I wish I knew them well enough to ask what 1 hour Martinizing is. I mean, I had to wait for the internet to, like, oh, I guess I'm looking up Martinizing. But I could have, like, if I had known the dry cleaner the way that Sesame Street promised that I would know local business owners and artisans and all that kind of thing. People, they list the, you know, occupations in your neighborhood. They'd say, these are the occupations in your neighborhood. One of them's a profession, but most are occupations. What's the difference with a profession and occupation? We're going to tell you that right now. A lawyer is a person right there. Now, I don't know if they never gave you that an option on Sesame Street. I watched a little Sesame Street I watched it with an attitude because I was already could spell. Not spell, but I knew my numbers and stuff. So I was like, this is for babies. But I'd watch it anyway because I like a good drama. And I was like, this is kind of gritty. You know, it kind of reminds me of, I remember thinking, this reminds me of Room 222 a little bit. Something like that. I don't know. I can't find my notes from when I was a kid, my television notes. I had them all. The most extensive ones were from like age 12 to 13 when I was watching, when they would broadcast at least three Stooges shorts after school. I'd get home just in time to have like an entire bag of potato chips and a huge bottle of Coca-Cola or something, and then watch the Three Stooges and take notes. And I had the Leonard Maltin book, so I'd be riding. I saw that one, you know, make notes. Jules White, huh? And, but I wonder if I was doing that younger. I wonder if I've always been a TV, TV critic can be a hobby. Gosh, I want to, let me free your heart. Whew. There is so much pressure in our culture to take everything that you do and make it into commerce or profession. It's like you can't do anything that you don't have to sell it or make money off of it because it feels frivolous when you don't. You say, well, I've done a lot of work making this thing, this paint-by-numbers picture of an elbow. I should probably have an exhibit. So, no, you don't. And I think that pressure comes from thinking that everything has to be productive, that you can't just do things for their own sake, for the love of it. But the love of it, the word means amateur. So you can do things for the love of it, and you can literally become the best in the world at it. That doesn't preclude being an amateur, really. But, you know, profession means that you have to call yourself that thing, and then, oh my gosh, that's pressure. And then people show up and they want baked goods because you said you were a baker. What I want to do is just let you know that you are free of that. You don't have to do that. You're good enough. Don't get your validation there. It's a treadmill. And there is within all the things that you might do, for instance, music or drawing or fly fishing or anything, making jewelry, photography, there is a way to elevate it to almost a spiritual act. There is a way to imbue it with a specialness, using it as a means to explore and see the world and yourself. Free from all judgment. You don't have to adjust it for others. So if I'm making it, and that is part of art, and that's fine, and I like that. I like a challenge. Say I'm going to make a song that will make people dance or something. That's a fine. That's a great challenge. But should I fall short and make something else, that's a wonderful thing too. And I can just do that if I want. If I can make, I can make frivolous things. I don't have to have a reason to do it. And not everything that you make has to be entered in that contest. So, oh, Aunt B, your pickles are good. Oh, well, Andy, I'm going to enter them in the fair. No, because we're lying about them being good. Don't do that. You know, just take the love.
That's my encouragement. Now, this may not be your problem, and so that this is advice is not for you. I'm freeing you in case that you want to, you know, in case you want to be free. Should you not, and I apologize, because, you know, I understand, too, that you might want to struggle. Now, as far as making money, I don't know anything about that, you're on your own. I'm just here about getting off one's back, maybe, is something I believe in. Oh, I see so many people on their own back. Now, when Popeye does it, it's interesting. Now, Popeye, the cartoon character, can do this sort of human Möbius strip thing where he goes down and puts his head between his legs and comes out behind himself. Now, I don't quite know how he does it. And it's amazing to see. And if you can find one of these old Popeyes, I don't know if they have them anymore. You're going to have to ask an old person.
Did they used to have Popeye cartoons? Oh, yes. The Popeye cartoons are a lot of times inspiration for modern physics and quantum theory.
Really?
Yes. That's why a lot of the very small particles are named, you know, olive oil or Pluto or one of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Wimpy, the Wimpy particle.
That might be one, actually. I don't even know. But I will. That's the thing about the quantum world, right? And time. And I think the Wimpy particle is indicative of that, because what the Wimpy particle says physically is,
I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Now, what does that mean exactly? So that is like an uncertainty principle kind of thing. There are literally the payment and the hamburger are floating out here separate until they coalesce into an event. And that is the now of the paying for the hamburger or the eating it. I don't know. But the Wimpy particle is, is part of that. As well as the Alice the Goon particle. Now I'm getting deep cuts. Sea Hag, which would be a great name for your boat. If you're wealthy enough to have a boat and you want to name it something, I think Sea Hag would be lovely. Any kind of Popeye reference, I think would go. The kids would love it. Kids love Popeye. All that cartoon stuff. Real little kids. It's so funny because now if you have kids now, you're probably having people who are reincarnated from the 30s or something. And so it's going to resonate with them. Yeah, you don't know. If there is reincarnation, should you tailor your entertainment for your children like that? So I would like to, if I knew, you know, when they came from. So in your announcement, your birth announcement, say, we are registered at different places. We would love things that have the Katzenjammer kids on them, or yellow kid, mainly Katzenjammer kids, or Katzenjammer kids. That'd be great. Little onesies like that. I don't know. But this could be my. I was raised with Dick Tracy things. I remember I had a little flat top doll and everything like that. Little prune face and everything. I had a little thing I'd sit in as a kid, and you'd have a little wrist radio thing. And say, you know, Dick Tracy to Sam. Dick Tracy to Sam. Where's Flat Top Jr.? Oh, get over here, Tracy. Dick Tracy's good because it's the one comic strip in the paper that had murder. People get murdered in it and die. And they die dead. And even the main characters. I remember Dick Tracy's daughter-in-law dies dead. And that was that might have been in the late 70s or something. And I was shocked. Because Dick Tracy has a son named Junior, and you know how just being adjacent to law enforcement can be sometimes it can be risky. And I don't even know what agency Dick Tracy works for. Whatever ones where they wear the yellow plastic coats and hats. But his daughter, Moon Maiden, who's from the moon, I think she was murdered, if I remember correctly. I haven't gone back and read that stuff. I hear I say, oh, I am a man of literature.
And yet I haven't read some of those old Dick Tracys in years and years, and now they're in book form, so it does make you feel like you're doing something literary.
Oh, yes, I am not simply reading the funnies, as they do not exist.
I did a stupid thing. I was supposed to be spying at this hotel, and because it was sort of an old hotel, I thought, I will sit in the lobby with a newspaper in front of me with like a hole cut in it so I can spy through the... I just drew attention to myself. I think about 3 separate YouTubers came up to me and were like, why are you holding a big piece of paper in front of your face? They had never seen anybody do that, so they didn't know I was reading anything on it. They was like, what? To them, it just looked like I was holding up a, you know, like a poster, but didn't have anything on it. It's just silly. And a lot of them are really nice. First YouTuber comes over to me and he says, sir, I can speak whatever language you speak. And I said, okay. And then the second YouTuber comes over and says, sir, I don't know what they do. I see them confronting people, but I don't always turn the volume up. But I think that's what they're doing. A lot of times they'll do that. And I just say, I'll either say Ubba Dubba, which I can't speak. That's a total lie. So Pig Latin, which I can get by. And I say standard English. That throws them. They don't know what that is. So I don't know. I'm doing a vernacular. Okay, bless you. If you want to speak in standard. I have a standard English table I go to at a bar. We meet and we speak standard English. And that's fine. I'm just saying it's only because it's dying. And I think it's so fun to do things. If it's a Tuesday, I pop over and then at the Klingon table. And then we do Klingon. And then over. Anavedwe Magovanan. We do the Elvish, Tolkien's Elvish. And then we do, I don't know, what's it? Tolkien's Elvish. That's a good table, though. You got to do that one. I like to put possessives. One of my favorite things, as you know, one of my favorite phrases in the English language is Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, because it just sounds like there's 2 possessives, even though there's not. But, you know, there's a movie, a vampire movie, Dan Curtis's Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. That's amazing. No, but I like to be able to, we used to play a memory game where you'd go around and go, add on to it, you know, see if you can add on Bram Stoker's Dan Curtis's Ruth's Chris Steakhouse next. And then you get up to 100, 200 places like that of modifiers. And, oh, it's fun. Gosh, life, sometimes I'm like, oh, life is stupid and pointless. And then I think about stuff like that and I go, no, it's not. No, it has a point. The point is just not pointy. So it's fuzzy. That's not a point, I guess. I guess really what I think life has is some kind of blunt foam thing. And then on that is a layer of literal foam. And then there's a layer of like quantum foam. And all that is the future. And then as that solidifies, that edge of solidification is the now. And that's what we're riding on right now. I saw a video of a lake sort of freezing over. I was noticing the edge between the frozen part and the not frozen part. And I go, oh, that's like time. That's a shock. Because that's what it does. We're moving these probabilities collapsing into Hardy White. Not just Hardy White, into you too and everything that ultimately happens. Oh, that's why you can say, I can't predict the future accurately, only fuzzily. Well, that is accurate right now because, yeah, I believe that. That is, it is literally fuzzy right now. And the fuzz is, here we come, going into the fuzz. My favorite thing is I would like to get in arguments with other people who also don't know what they're talking about. And I've noticed that where, well, let me go back. I was in a club and it was inspired by magic, and it was inspired by the phrase to pull things out of your butt, which Houdini came up with because that's how he would obtain the keys.
for his, you know, escape things. He'd be like, chain me up and put locks on it, and I'll be naked, therefore I'll have no pockets to hide a key. Now you're like, all right, you know. And the age is now, we're used to people like, you know, I came up with people shoving, you know, $100,000 of drugs in their colon or something. So I'm like, well, there's all a bunch of places to hide things. So he was like, I'm going to be clever and, you know. But that spawned a whole movement called improv. So what if that key was the material for my act? And I got to say, okay, I'm going to get up on stage naked. I got nowhere to keep my material. And I go, yes, you do. You're pulling it out of your butt. You're not writing it. So that is true. But anything can be improvised. And so I joined this club where that's the name of the club. It's a little cruder. I'm making it a little radio friendly. This is what we do, and then we improvise. We make it up as we go along because it feels to us as if we are floating in all this potential. It's not unlimited, right? I mean, you can't, but there's, you can, what do you call it, finesse it a little bit. You know, you sense that. That's how you don't really manipulate the future. You sort of finesse it and hope for the best. And that's what I always do. I always hope for the best. And I realized that on the radio, that if I err on the side of trying to speak to you directly and connect to you and ease some pain of your heart, I think that's important. Why? Well, you know, I'm not sure that we all have an opportunity to do it. I love this anonymous way. It's almost like confession, right? I mean, we can speak. I can recognize things about your struggle, and you can secretly acknowledge them and cop to them, right? And I can say, I know you feel frustrated. Sometimes you feel insecure. Sometimes you feel worthless and small. Other times you feel, gosh, I think I have too many blessings. I feel like I get more than I deserve. And you vacillate maybe between kind of self-loathing and self-love and hope for yourself. Sometimes you see yourself as the young you. You feel maybe compassion. Sometimes you feel as if there's been so many injustices in your life that they're insurmountable. And I understand that. And I can't do anything to solve it. But boy, you know, the lack of anybody acknowledging it can be painful too. Saying, even, I would love even a stranger or a movie or a poem or a postage stamp to acknowledge what I'm going through. You know, I'm not a failure. I think in many ways, I think I've been set up for failure by a failed expectations of a failed fail thing. Failville. How can you live in Failville and succeed? So I think a lot of times we are doing remarkably well, given that the rules don't seem clear. I mean, the rules don't seem clear if we were on a desert island. Just the natural world seems confusing to us, doesn't it? It would be a struggle to survive. Well, add to that the insane imaginations of human beings and their vulnerabilities and their fears. Take all those fearful apes and surround yourself with them. And now it's even scarier, isn't it? So that's why I'm here to say, let's take a little respite. Let's make an island in time together and take a deep breath and create a space here where we are enough. I was in a group. I was just seeing a dance performance, and they tried to get me to breathe deeply with others. And I'm just sort of, you know me, I'm anti-authoritarian, so it's like, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me to breathe. And I held my breath. Then it was not, and I got all stressed out. I should have just breathed. But sometimes we need that. We forget to sort of just relax, you know? Relax, you know? Remember I told you I had that gas? Okay, you don't relax everything. Oh God, I wish I could relax it. You know what you would be good in? The cry room. I've been to houses of worship. A lot of times they'll have a room you can go. It's like a Well, do you all know what a squint is?
Oh, I'm a Catholic priest, I do.
Okay, Father, but I mean, other than that, so it's a room with a glass. You could just look through it, and then the service is on the radio. That way, if you have a crying baby, and crying babies need to be churched, just like everybody. So you've got a crying baby, and it's a very accepting Reformed congregation, but they're like, oh, it'd be lovely if you were. So you go there, and you can watch it there. Now, I always thought, well, why don't you have one of those for, like, if anybody has, like, an intestinal distress one? And there's got to be more than one, because there's a lot of reasons that you don't want to, that you love your group, your community, but you don't want to sit with them necessarily. I should save that for the marathon show, because that's my WSA. I love you all. Do I always want to sit with all of you? No, no. I'm just talking about staff, not staff, you know, DJs at FMU. No, I don't. I think I like everybody because of that lack of contact. I feel bad for people that have to interact with one another and go, God, I used to like so-and-so. But I just think, oh, you're all just wonderful. And I don't know, no one, it's just too small a place for anybody who have told me they don't like me directly. And I think that is also lovely. So continue to hold your tongue. And I shall, I have opinions and I don't state them. Oh my gosh. In that's, I don't want to have to tell you I'm doing you a favor. I'm not. Who cares what I think?
Excuse me?
Oh, I'm sorry, listener.
Well, it's not, we don't, it's not caring, it's curiosity.
Oh, that unburdens me, thank you. Because I may not have anything that is of tremendous value for you. I come from a radio tradition that's long gone. You know, why is it long gone? Well, I think like the handlebar mustache, it turned out to be, you know, not something that can't endure just because of the stuff that gets the soup that encrusts on it. Now, how does soup encrust on a radio style? I don't know. Ask Gene Shepherd. There were people that could talk on the radio for a long time. This is before shock radio. By the time I came along, you know, radio was starting to transition from people who would just tell goofy stories or go on about stuff or and into trying to get you worked up. But I just think life gets you worked up enough, and provoking people, that's just the easiest way to do it, isn't it? I mean, how cheap. I'm not going to give in to that. Boy, it's really easy to anger people. I do it without trying sometimes, so I'm really super not going to try. Because it's bad enough that I get people angry trying to be funny. I can't imagine if I was literally trying to get people angry.
Maybe then they'd laugh at you.
Oh, that'd be everything. If everything was ironic, you just set out every day to do the opposite. And that'd be something else. That's something you got to look into. I just recently started a novel by the mystery writer Rufus King, called The Secret Beyond the Door. Original title, something, Room Number 13. But it was made into a movie, 1947, with Joan Bennett and Michael Redgrave, called Secret Beyond the Door. And the story is that this woman marries this rich fella, only to find that he collects rooms, intact rooms, everything that was in a particular room. The bed, the table, all the objects of rooms where murders were committed. So he'd find a murder scene, and then he'd get everything in the room, and he had rooms in his house where they weren't recreations of the murder scene. They'd literally taken the whole room and transported it. Now, you've seen that, like, at museums they do that. Say, this entire room, this is Lucretia Borgia's sewing room. And I don't know what she would sew in here, little bags for poison or something. But it was that kind of thing. And I'm not going to spoil the book or the movie for you. But I haven't finished the book, but I know it ends differently than the movie. So I went ahead and I watched the movie, the Fritz Lang movie. But I've been sort of like mainly, Mrs. Howell is in it from Gilligan's Island. And it's kind of a crossover. She plays Mrs. Howell. She's, I'm about to, in 20 years, I'm going to go on a 3-hour tour and then never return. enjoy the idea of these rooms being somewhere where something happened. It's a familiar idea. It's almost feels like it's from a dream. I almost have this strange memory, this idea of rooms being preserved, and it goes along with my memory that there were graveyards with these sort of clear mausoleums. It would be like a clear glass block or a building that you could see into, and inside was the remains of the dead posed doing things that they did in life. So it might be somebody sitting in their chair smoking a pipe and reading a book in this little vignette, you know, and this dream was very vivid, and there was maybe a woman ironing or something like that, even something kind of pedestrian. And I am that it sort of has in something imbermberbabed, indrungenated, incrustinated, engraved, something along those lines, stamp embossed itself into my brain. And I keep thinking about that, and I'm worried I'm going to dream about it again. And I'm sort of scared. Now, there's no corpses in the book. They're just the murder scenes. You know, doesn't say, oh, and the body. That you can't do that. But, well, the very wealthy can do anything. Yeah, unfortunately, it's looking like that. Gosh, did we know that? I think we knew that. I have, did you see Caligula? There was a Caligula, that movie that Bob Guccione made, and Penthouse Magazine's Bob Guccione. And am I getting this right? Is this true?
I don't know, man. Keep going.
Yeah, it was like an X-rated Caligula movie. And it just seems like, I feel like our politicians would do worse now. It seems tame now. Because I think he made like a horse a senator, and we have that, don't we? I think so. Who knows? I don't, you know, that's one, I don't ask what species my representative is, but that'd be fun, though. Maybe more just like an animal congress. Is that okay? I mean, because isn't it staff that does most of things anyway? So it'd be just fun just having like a good-natured golden retriever there, sitting there, and they could teach it to put its little paw on the votey thing, right? And the staff are running there going, this one there, you could put a treat on yes. And they go, ah! You know, things, animals that would be eligible, I think, for Congress. Dogs for sure. All dogs, all cats mostly. I mean, if they were up for it. A lot of birds. A lot of bird species could totally do it. Minor birds. Crows. Ravens. Parrots. I think it'd be cute if the congressman from Conyers, Georgia was a Conyer. I mean, just like clever stuff like that, I think would win elections. But you'd have to think ahead because you might have to breed the animal ahead of time for the position. And also you want to consider that. You say, well, you know, it's a 6-year term. How long does the species live? Right? So I'm saying, like, oh, I'd like to run a cockatiel. All right. But that's like, you know. What if they don't make it? Or no, that's about 15 years, right? It was like a budgie. I'm going to run a budgie. You know, that's going to be, you know, how old's the budgie now? A year. Get ready for the governor to appoint a finch or something to finish out the term. Other animals. Well, I think any animal that made a good pet. Let's see. Oh, I can't think of any more. I guess it'd just be dogs and cats and birds. And, you know, maybe puppets. I think there will be also beings that are not organic in the future. That's what I see. I see, like, just affable, like the fun little robots from the movies. Like an R2-D2 kind of beeping. Beep, beep, boop, 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 boop. I think it's so funny now. We look at that.
We look at Star Wars and the, you know, how they saw the future. And we realize now you can make robots talk words. Right then they're thinking, beep, beep, bop, bop, beep, bop, bop. I guess the one, though, the protocol robot or whatever, he has a voice and everything like that. But I don't know, is he thinking or is it a tape loop? I haven't gotten into Star Wars very deeply. They haven't finished making movies they've already released, which is why I don't watch it. So it's like, well, let's go back to the one made in 1977 and add stuff. Okay, I'll, you know, let me know when you're done and I'll go watch that. Because it's kind of fun because you can watch the same movie a few times and it changes. But I think that's, again, us old timers are going to say, that's not the ending I remember. And you're going to say, oh, it's Mandela Effect. No, no, well, Mandela's in it. I'm not even lying. He was in a lot of stuff. What was he in? He was in, Nelson Mandela was in Electric Company. And he, I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe. It's hard to, that's a memory is funny that way too. That's going to happen to, if you ever have, God forbid, and God doesn't forbid anything really, any kind of memory thing when you get older. Sometimes God forfends, but not forbids. You might not know you don't remember something correctly, and it's going to be fun. That'll be fun. You're going to insist on things that are fanciful. And some of them I might be responsible for. You go, oh, you put that idea in my head one silly Thursday night, Hardy White. And then when I sit there, addled and infirm, confusing my children, it's going to be you, you know, who's saying things like, isn't that a congressman a dog? That's not nice, Papa. I don't mean that. I mean a literal dog, for God's sakes. I don't want to be too crusty. I hope I'm a gentle old person. I'm beginning my oldness now. I think it happens. I'm told that once you hit a certain age, it's exponential. It's every day there's progress. You look and you go, wow. It's like I'm working out to get wrinkles or something. Cause used to work out when I was young, you'd lift weights and go, and the next day you'd go like, ooh, I look kind of buff. Now it's just like, I look the next day and I go, I look like the guy at the ending of 2001. All of a sudden, when did that happen? I was young and full of potential. I didn't realize it wasn't potential at the time. It felt and tasted like it, you know. Every time that I'd belch from stress, I know that's potential. I think I'm gonna be big. My life's gonna be. I thought that. I go, wow. I'm going to be. I thought it's the first time on the radio. I thought I'm gonna be the next Bob and Ray. I'm serious. I think I'm going to be the next Bob. Well, I didn't know there wasn't going to, they weren't any more or going to be any of those. So that's the thing. That's like, well, again, watching Sesame Street, I was like, I want to repair toasters like Mr. Wimple. That's not his name. Mr. Hooper. Mr. Hooper. And they called him Mr. Hooper. Because this is real trivia. So the first Mr. Hooper was a Southern preacher, and they called him Reverend Hooper because he had hoop. You know what hooping is? Hoopa. That's when you preach, and you do that, right? And you get this like a rhythm. It's called hooping, and he would do that, and it scared the children, and it scared the Muppets, and so they say you can't do that. You know, have your toaster. Like that. And they go, oh, you know, Mr. Reverend Hooper. And he was scaring the children. And then Elmo would come on and explain, say, you know, Mr. Hooper's just full of the spirit. And he'd explain gifts of the spirit to children. And, but, you know, then it changed. And then say, well, let's just have this elderly man who repairs toasters. And then children will say, hey, that's a life choice. I could do that. Or I could live in a garbage can. Or I don't know, what are the other characters? I don't know, are they working? I think they are. They look like, you know what they look to me like all the other adults on
on Sesame Street, I would look at them and go, you're educators. I feel like you look to me like early education educators. I don't know if that's accurate, and I don't know. I've never, at that point, I had never been to Brooklyn or anything. Like, so I didn't know, right? And I'd never seen a brownstone. I didn't know people lived in them. And I don't know that they do, because they don't show any interiors, do they? Except for Bert and Ernie's place, which is, am I wrong, or is it huge for a Brooklyn apartment? But they mainly, everybody's out on the steps like it's perpetually summer. And I guess sometimes they would do a seasonal thing. And but Big Bird blows an opportunity to leave for half the year. Say, oh, yeah, it's in my contract. I think Big Bird would not be hanging around in winter. And you say, oh, that might be a good point. Yeah, he's not going to be.
But what if he's like one of those city birds that just lives in the, you know, eats little seed and then lives in a garage or something?
I don't think he is one of those. I think he might migrate. So maybe he's just on half the year. And then they have a special winter, little penguin friend or something that comes on in the winter. And I don't know how they'd work that. Maybe it's not a real penguin. It's one of those things you hold on to when you're learning to ice skate that's shaped like a penguin. Does that ring any bells? So you're learning to ice skate, and they give you a walker, and it's shaped like a penguin sometimes. I've had one as an adult because I can't ice skate. And there's video of me ice skating not too long ago, about 10 years ago. And I think I crashed into children. And that's why that's my roller skating technique too. So I don't really do that stuff anymore. But and also, could you imagine skating? I know some of you have skated on actual frozen lakes and fallen in and perished and died and then been resurrected and then have contacted me and say, I really enjoy your show. And I appreciate that so much. You know I appreciate that, especially coming from the frozen dead. You know, that's the most important thing. I have moved you. You rail. I bet you don't even write public figures. I'm not really a public figure. That's why you have to write me. I always ask for it. I don't think a lot of, like, real broadcasters don't go, hey, y'all aren't writing me. Because they don't. They're scared of you. But this is different. You're scared of me. So you're locked in here with me. I'm Rorschach. That's a Rorschach test, how you see that character, isn't it?
Oh, he seems like a good guy.
The idea, though, that we have been brought together by fate here in this flesh prison, and there is no other confused, frightened, partially conscious entity that I would rather be sharing this confusing, horrifying limbo with than you. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think we all crave another Mr. Rogers. I think we don't crave anybody who's cynical or crusty necessarily. That I don't think that moves anybody. You know what I mean? Like, if it's like Mr. Rogers, but he's also like, you know, I hate people with pork pie hats. I don't think that's great. But then the other thing is like, well, you know, moral role models that are naive or silly too. So, you know, what's something that we could really, here, I'm going to propose something. No one person. You are the Mr. Rogers that you're looking for. You can adjust that within yourself. You can see the world in a generous way, a more, you know, you don't have to tell anybody that you've been naive or caring, or you don't have to tell anybody, but you can, like, gentle up inside a little bit sometimes. You know, you can be, say, you know what, I'm going to re-naive. I know that sounds strange, but I'm going to stop expecting the worst from some. And I'm not talking strangers. You know, just this is like more like your dry cleaner. Because I don't know what to make of strangers or celebrities or politicians or anything. But I do crave better interactions with live human beings. And they're fine now, but I think they could be even better
It's such a short, strange life. And oh, I know that you, like I, must just absolutely crave that kind of connection with other humans to know that, yes, what you're going through is what they're going through in many ways. We all share the same fears and confusions and shortcomings and all that kind of things. And some of us have them just in abundance, the shortcomings. So blessed with shortcomings and faults, some of you. Isn't it wonderful?
No, I don't know.
Who knows? Nobody's perfect and everybody's perfect. That'd be frightening to say, oh, no one's perfect. And then God said, yes, everyone is. Now what?
You go, oh, but they contain...
Oh, you got to think about things now. What if you can't do anything about the mistakes? Oh, my goodness. Well, you can listen to Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County. And online, WFMU.org, worldwide, Rockland County, New York City, did I say that? And online, WFMU.org, worldwide. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony. Teaches
that we are where we know we ought to be.
Thank you.